Sex Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine atmosphere, reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind. Hey, world, how's it going? Jazzy?
Yes?
Do you know what this week represents?
Happy 1 year anniversary!
Holy frack-a-holies, huh?
We have been around for a year.
We have been doing this stuff for a year. 50 episodes in the can-ish. The first episode's kind of like missing.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I have to do some serious data detective recovery stuff on that one, but it's kind of missing. However, we have all the rest of the other shows, and so I thought it would be, like, really cool to do, like, for our anniversary show, a best of show! Isn't that neat?
Awesome.
I thought so, too. By the way, a little birdie told me you heard some cookies.
Cookies?
Did you hide the cookies?
Yeah, I hid the cookies. But I did not hide the first episode with the cookies. Okay.
You want the world to end, don't you?
No, I'll give you one cookie at a time, okay?
What do you mean, one cookie? Don't you know I have an orderly balance of requirement of 4 cookies at a time?
Really?
Yes, every morning.
Only 4 cookies in the morning?
Actually, I generally just do 4 cookies in the morning.
Really?
Yeah. But, guess what?
You found more cookies?
I always find more cookies. And now, we're going to go into past episodes of After Rod. Rawr, 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 rawr.
Yay!
And we're going to start off with a very special portion of one of our very, very, very first episodes. One of the only bits that have survived the whole thing of After Rod. Goat Boy's rant from episode 1. Go, Goat Boy.
Have you ever been on Facebook? Chances are you have. And given the company you're keeping right now, I expect you're interested in writing and the horror genre in general. You see, there is a trend occurring on Facebook and other social media regarding a series of books and films that vampires that really sparkle. Yes, I know. Madness. Sparkly vampires. Why, we all know that vampires do not sparkle. Or do we? You see, what boggles my mind is the absolute hatred that some of these books and films inspire. It would seem, judging by some of the more vitriolic posts I have read, that the amount of hatred one can express for the stories is directly proportional to the size of one's penis. Of course, were this the case, there would be thousands of people unable to walk unaided. I myself have not read the books, nor have I seen the films. I know of them, as it is virtually impossible to look in any direction without seeing that oh-so-slappable face of Mr. Cullen, expression fixed as if set in stone. Personally, set on fire would be my choice. But that is because the look of him annoys me, and I have a very low tolerance for annoying things. Which brings me back to the hate. How can there be so much hate expressed by people who purport never to have watched the films or read the books? 50 million. Not bad, eh? She has made an estimated 50 million from her books. But hang on, I thought they were all shit. You told me they were shit. How can she have made 50 million if her work is so dire? Oh, hang on. People are buying them. Why didn't I realise that? What? She has a fan base too? No fucking way. But you all said she was a terrible writer and that her stuff was shit. And yet, here we are. Every other day, people banging on about how shit they are. Oh, where's your bestseller? Don't have one yet? Must be jealousy, pure and simple. Oh, and let's just clear another thing up, okay? For all you vampires don't sparkle freaks, ready? You say they don't sparkle. So, do they count up to 10 and then laugh as thunder rolls in the background? Do they advertise chocolate-based cereals? Do they have their hair done up in two huge white buns and wear long red satin robes and face the danger of being staked if they get too close to the wonderfully wooden Keanu Reeves? Do they wear evening dress and long capes? Come on, where are the haters spouting that vampires should live in castles and not drive around in vans with the windows blacked out? Anne Rice's vampires? Come on. I enjoy the books, but they virtually sparkle. Never have I read such homoeroticism alluded to vampires in my life. And yes, dear God, do they whine and bitch. And guess what? Here's the kicker. The books and films are aimed at teenage girls. Yes, they are not for grown-ups. Young teenage girls. Do you get it yet? So, in conclusion, there are so many vampires in fiction out there, so many different types, varieties, so many rule changes and genre reconstructions. Are you going to let one little series get you down? The books, when stacked on top of each other, are not very high. You really should be able to get over it.
So, let's get back to story time, shall we?
Yes, let's get back to story time.
Okay.
Once upon a time.
No, not like that.
Oh.
Not like
that.
Not
a fairy tale?
Not a fairy tale. No, not the one.
Can there be a princess in it?
Princess?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll start with a princess.
Okay.
Princess Himmeltep. She was bored. You know, walking down to the local cemetery. Upon a midnight dreary, kind of checking out the scene, wondering about what's going on, questioning the values that she currently possessed in life, and looking around and seeing an escape, a landscape, all of these things around, and slowly talking to herself, in her head of course, not out loud, because out loud that would be crazy people, and people would say, that princess, she crazy. So, she's walking along.
Maybe she's talking to a ghost.
Maybe she is talking to a ghost. One never knows. Because there are stranger things in life than there are in fiction.
Okay, so she's walking along, talking to herself.
Oops, I don't know where I just typed that.
And a zombie attack.
No, we're not going to put a zombie in this early in the stage. Come on.
Okay.
This has got to be a little bit more lead up to stuff here. I mean, we've got to set pace, got to set drama, got to set issues, got to set action. She is hungry. Yes. She's like, wow, it's been a while since she had a meal. That was like, she's been walking for like several hours. It's getting dark out too. Now she's really starting to talk to herself. It's like, I wish I had a cheeseburger. Really do. Wait, how could she know what a cheeseburger is? She's a princess. Ooh, now we need to set a better setting. Modern or early? Let's go with modern. She's a modern princess. So, her cell phone, she pulls out, and she looks, and it's like, oh, no signal. But wait a sec, I'm at the cemetery. There should be a signal here. This is not... What? Ooh, I like that idea. So... And by the way, if I were typing this story out, you wouldn't be getting the so's and the a's and the ands and all the other oops and the stuffs as well. So, as she's going to the cemetery, she's crossing the little bridge. You know, it's a little river that runs besides, tinkling little brooks, like little soft chirchering moments. And she remembers, there is a guy. He's got a little chapel around the cemetery, and he's probably got some food there. So she's going to say, I think she's got some food. I'd say that in a higher voice, but I can't do that with the way my voice feels right now. Oh, I think she's got some food over there. No, I'm not going to try that. Well, it wasn't that the cell phone wasn't paid. It was out of tune with the environment. So all of that mountainous areas around this small little village. And so she's walking over to the little chapel. As she walks over the little bridge, she hears a knock. She's wondering, why the hell is going to knock on a bridge? What the? She kind of did this, what the? Oh my god. And then looks over, it's like, hello? And she hears this deep, growly voice. Hello, princess. How's it going? And she's like, oh, just fine. Thank you very much. Who are you? We need a name for a troll. Name. Come on. Somebody with a name.
We're piggish.
Okay. I'm We're Piggish. And I just saw you walking around and thought you might like to chat over a second or two. And she's... Okay. Where are you, Mr. We're Piggish?
I'm underneath the bridge. Ah, come right up. Is it dark out yet?
Yeah, sun's down.
Oh, good. Good. I like it when the sun's down. Clump, 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 clump. Splash.
Oh,
I had to wash that one off. Sorry.
The troll walks up to the bridge. Kind of tall guy, you know, about probably 15 feet. Kind of hairy, brutish, big nose. Long, stouty arms and stuff, you know. That kind of thing. Kind of creepy looking, but he's got a friendly face. Hi, Mr. Weir Piggish. What are you doing around here?
I'm just trolling around. It's what I do. I troll. I troll, and then I troll some more. I it's kind of boring around here, though. Nobody comes by this often, too often anymore.
Oh, that's sad. I was just bored, though. I was out for a walk, and my family, you know, them over there, they were just kind of being really tacky and, you know, really, 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 you know, that.
Yeah, I hear you. My family, when I used to have a family... Hey, they're all dead now. I don't know what happened to them. Yes, I do know what happened to them. They stayed out in the sun too long. They got burnt. To a char.
I don't get it. That's...
Okay, you don't need to.
Wait a second, what's a Satchmo?
Oh, I don't think we can do that.
Well, Mr. Troll, Mr. We're Piggish, do you know where a princess could get a cheeseburger?
Oh, yes, I do, actually. Yes, yes. Right over here. We're going to a little place that I like to call My Space.
Your Space? What do you mean, Your Space?
No, My Space! It's a little place underneath the bridge I call My Space.
Ooh. That sounds ominous. Is it safe?
Yes, of course it is.
Oh, okay. So, the big hairy guy, troll, thing, odd individual as he were, clumps on down the side of the bridge. And Princess, oh, by the way, do we have a name for Princess yet?
I thought we named Princess at the beginning.
Did we?
I thought we did.
Did we
Maybe
name
we
princess?
Can name the princess now.
Let's name the princess. Penelope. Penelope. I hate that name. Penelope. No, I don't hate that name.
TJ said Gertrude.
Yeah, but Katie said Penelope. Penelope? Penelope. Penelope. That's why I can always never do that name right, because when I'm reading it, I always read it wrong. It's Penelope. Princess Penelope. Oh, my. She's such a lovely lass, with long hair, and a long dress, and riding boots.
Golden locks.
Red, actually, red.
Oh, red?
Red hair. She's got red hair. Go with Gertrude. Why? Where's Gertrude going?
No, teach it. Oh. Kitty's saying go with Gertrude.
Why? Where is she? Where's she going? Is she going someplace?
Over there up the mountain.
She's going up the mountain. Oh, my God. I'm going to get tired after this.
She's going to the cell phone store. up the mountain.
There's no cell phone store in MySpace. MySpace is dead. It's Penelope.
No, she's
I can
going
say Penelope out. Now. Hee. Besides, because it's got alliteration, it's a better name. So it's PP. Princess Penelope. All those P's. Pitter patter, pitter patter, pitter 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 patter. Penelope. What do you mean Penelope is copyrighted? Penelope is fun? What?
Penelope is funny.
Ooh. You know what? I like Penelope. Because that segues into a nice little thing. Okay. Princess Penelope is following Troll Weirpiggish, the grim and growly and grouchy giant person thing, as they walk around the side of the bridge, and they go down, splash, splash, splash into the water.
Oh, hey, princess, watch out for the water. It's wet.
It does a bit of his head shake thing as he looks around.
Oh, that was supposed to be funny, princess.
Oh, ha, 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 I get it. Water, wet. That's clever. Maybe. So then they're walking under the bridge, and underneath the bridge, it is bright light. Bright, bright, huge. But it's only like a little ball. It's like tiny. Fits in the size of a palm of a person's hand. And it's spiraling, and it's twirling, and it's going in round shapes, and it's going around. And Princess Penelope, looks at it, and it's kind of strange. It's like, ooh, that's pretty. And she hollers over to the Mr. Troll guy. Hey! And Mr. Troll guy, and she says, what's with the pretty light?
Oh, you noticed that, huh? That's MySpace. It's just sitting there in kind of a weird void kind of place, you know? It's kind of, I look at it every once in a while, and then I ask for stuff, and stuff comes out of it.
What? What do you mean? Like, is it a wishing well type thing? Is it really? That's neat. That would be cool. Can I ask to try something?
Oh, yeah! Go ahead! Try it! Just be careful, though. Don't push your hand into the light, because if you do, you'll be in a different book, and your face may hurt after that. And that would be uncool, man. Uncool.
Oh, okay. That sounds moderately on the unusually weird and circumlocutive. Oh, I didn't say that word right. I'm sorry. I don't know what it means. It just sounded cool, and it was like a big word that somebody told me in high school, and I'm not going to say that word anymore. But what do I do? Do I knock on it?
No! Just go right up. Kind of like pat it on the side. Say nice words. Say, here, kitty, 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 kitty.
So Penelope, being the trusting soul that she is, walks up to the bright little spinning ball of light and dust and weird stuff, gets up close to it, looks at it kind of quirkily, gives it a couple of looks, looks at it again a couple other times, and then says, here, kitty, 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 kitty. Here, kitty, 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 kitty.
Boom. No kaboom?
Well, no, I'm waiting for EW to do something. It's time for the last one. There are no sparkly zombies.
Dang it.
No. Never will be. That guy that you were rooting for, he had a bit of sparkle on him.
That's why I was rooting for him.
I know that.
He's going to win. I'm telling you, he's going to win.
I'm telling
you.
I will say there is nothing about discrimination amongst the zombie brethren and sistren. We don't really care about a lot of differences in people. We like look at people, say big people, small people, funny-looking people, straight-looking people, quirky-looking people, all these different types of people, you know. And we say, they're all good. They're all people. They're all dinner. Yummy. Or they're zombies. Ooh, they're friends. Yummy. That's it. There's nothing else in between. But when you bring sparkly zombies into the equation, sparkly zombies, well, you know, they're a target for both the living and the zombies.
Oh?
Yes. Sparkly zombies are not very well received. It is the only thing that will get the zombie nation a little bit piqued about stuff. Sparkly zombies. We don't put up with that. But apparently Wolfie had some sparkles. Go get her. Go get her. Go.
She said she didn't have any sparkles.
You believe Wolfie?
Mm-hmm.
You'd believe Wolfie over the voice of your future president, zombie?
I'm sorry, I believe Wolfie.
Okay.
Politicians lie, remember?
Okay. Lee press on zombies? What? No! We don't have any of that. Oh, well, okay, we do.
Press on zombies?
Yes.
Yes. Really?
Yes. Yes, okay. Okay. So, our final product placement company. Are you ready?
Okay.
Dead Sea Squirrels. Body lotions.
Squirrels?
Body lotions. Soul unguents. Chemical cleansers. And exfoliants to die for. Don't forget to check out the Dead Squirrel Loofah. It gets in under your skin and makes the body feel clean and desensitized. And if you act now, you should. And if you act now, you can get this Dead Squirrel Cozy to keep your nuts warm and safe and protected. So you know what? Dead Sea Squirrels, they got my nuts! And I have to say, that's not very nice. He's a caring human being, too. He's a person. He's got feelings and emotional connections with things and stuff.
You just want to eat his brains because you're a zombie.
I want to eat everybody's brains, not just his.
Have a cookie.
I will. I have one right there. It's just waiting for me to nom on it.
Well, have a cookie and don't eat my brain because it doesn't taste very well.
Okay. So do you know what we're going to talk about tonight?
Movies!
Yeah, what kind of movies?
Remakes.
And sequels. Why we love them, and why we hate them.
Now you're throwing sequels at me?
Sequels, remakes, it's the same idea. They get all messed up. They've got the same goods and bads and reasons for why we like and don't like stuff. So, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Are you one of those people that likes to see the sequels and the remakes?
It depends. If I like them to begin with, I will go see the sequels again. Remakes. I haven't seen too many of the original versions. I usually catch the remakes because they were made before I was born. And then it's like, oh, this movie's coming out. And then I go and watch it, and it's like, my parents are like, that was a remake. It's like, I don't care. So, chances are I probably didn't know it was a remake before I watched it.
Good. I would tend to say, along the same ideas, if they made a good one, I would enjoy it. However, I see so few good remakes, and the sequels seem to always be a constant slide downwards as opposed to upwards, that I'm always jaded about the whole idea of sequels and remakes. Because I've seen a lot of movies, unfortunately, a lot of the originals, and a lot of the remakes, and so rarely do I think they nail it with the remake. I'm going to give you one of my favorite examples of this. Rollerball. I'm going to guess that you probably haven't seen it, so that's okay.
I haven't seen the original.
Have you seen the remake?
I have.
And what did you think of that movie? Okay, so why did you not like it based on just having seen that movie alone?
It didn't catch my interest. It didn't keep me into it.
Why would that be?
I just got bored with it.
Come on. You've heard of Silent Hill, right?
I've seen Silent Hill.
And what did you think of that movie?
It kind of creeped me out.
You should check out the video game. The whole purpose of the video game was to creep you out. But the Silent Hill movie? Oh, I love that movie. Because it's so thick with atmosphere. And the characters actually move somewhere. And they do stuff. And they become things. And the world that they painted there was just so Lovecraftian that it was a joy to just be in. And, you know, there's a sequel coming out this month, the end of the month, I think, on the 26th or something like that. That looks even creepier. I am so looking forward to it. Really want to see it. Burning, burning, burning. See those colors? Burning! Rawhaish! I don't know what that meant. Oh, hey. See, I'm just trying to look up something quickly about... Oh, hey. This should be fun. October 31st. Submit birth date. What does it mean? Oh, you're a pretty traditional person. If it's lasted, it's probably good.
What?
This is the meaning of your birthday if it's on October 31st. Okay, I'm going to close that because that's going to make me laugh and giggle and do stupid things. So yes, you know, there are a whole bunch of superstitions about Halloween, right?
Yes.
Okay, would you like to hear a few of them?
Isn't one of them that black cats are bad?
Yes, that's number 13, black cats! Hellraiser is fun, and yes... I am looking forward to the World War Z movie. I do hope it will be good. Because if it's not going to be good, I am going to have to hit somebody with a really, really big stick. Really big stick.
Big stick? No!
Oh yeah, big stick.
No. You gotta get a huge stick. Not a big stick, a huge stick.
I've got the huge stick. But we're not going to go there. We're going to go here. And you know what we're going to talk about now?
What?
Monkeys.
Devil monkey!
Dude. Valley? No. Man. Dude? Yeah, okay. Dude. No. I don't know.
Yeah, he did a Canadian Valley dude, EW.
No, man. I did a Valley girl Canadian. Yo. Get it. Get right. Get it. Get it. Get it in the make it. In the make it. In the make it. In the make it. In the make it.
I think we need to bonk ZZ over the head and send him to bed.
Won't work. Tried that before. Didn't work then, won't work now.
Really?
Yep.
Did you do the bonking? Because you might not have bonked enough.
I self-bonked myself. No, I'm quite safe. I'm sure I'm not safe self-bonking. There will be no self-bonking here. Well, maybe later, but no bonking here. Dun 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 dun! And by the way, I love turkey. Turkey's good. Gobble, 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 gobble! What, you don't like turkey? What the hell's wrong with you?
No, my family does it too much. And
what do you mean too much?
Okay, my turn to rant.
Sure, go ahead, rant about turkey. That would be interesting.
Turkey and the fact that every year, my parents used to work at a hospital, and every year they would each get a turkey from the hospital for a Christmas present. So then we'd have two free turkeys around the house, so it's like way too many turkeys. There was one year where me and my brother worked there as well, so we brought home four turkeys that year. Four turkeys! That's insane!
The world is ready now. It's not enough, but it is ready. Do you know what it's ready for?
Pinky and the Brain?
No, they're dead. I ate them already.
Aww. Yep. I like Pinky and the Brain, though.
I know, a lot of people did. That's why I've eaten them. It's part of my plans. For world domination, laddie. I'm gonna take over the world. It's all mine. I'm taking it all. Yes. Not the little part over there, not the big part over there, the old part. All of them. They are now mine. You don't like it? I don't care. I'm going to eat you and your grandma too. And her little dog.
No. Not grandma's little donkey.
Not the donkey. The dog. The dog. And the kitty cat.
No.
Ooh, we got anti-venom cookies? Wait, I want some of those.
Zombie, we got her to, ZZ, we got her to watch a horror thing. Ooh,
which one?
Oh,
it
God.
Was a Christmas one.
Which one? Black Christmas?
No.
Silent Night, Deadly Night?
No. It was a Christmas preview for The Last Exorcism.
Is that the one where the...
Very hot, sexy chick.
It's set in Paris or something like that, and the one chick starts crawling up the side of the wall or whatever?
No, this was worse. This is. It looks like she's saying, it looks like this really hot girlfriend, whatever, and she's in like this skimpy Santa outfit.
Sounds good so far.
Like you would get from the lingerie stores and stuff, dress up and role play in the bedroom with your boyfriend.
Oh,
or
let's
husband.
Be naughty. Let's be naughty. Naughty, can I wear Santa Claus
like,
outfit?
I have an early Christmas present for you.
Oh, I saw that
she,
one.
She like sticks her boobs in the camera and stuff, and then she goes off camera, and next thing you know, rah! It's like, holy fucking shit. What just happened?
I was on a Skype call with her, and she screamed so loud. It was too good. It was one of those ones you wish he had a recording going at that moment.
Yes, I am aware of this one. This one was amusing.
Yes, actually, I saw it cycling again this year.
Oh, yeah. No, it's been. I've already cycled it at least once. Jack shared it. I saw it from him. Copied it a couple times.
The film is on Netflix right now.
Not watching it.
Ooh.
Although I did show that video to one of my friends, a guy, and he's like, "Ooh, hello, you can come on over here. Ooh, hey, where'd you go? Holy shit."
Yeah. I've got one for you, Jazzy. You'll like this one. It has Christmas trees. It has little kids. It has bunny wabbits. And it has lots of gore.
Yeah, you lost me at the bunny rabbits.
It's Treevenge.
Oh, what was that one with the rabbits? That's the one I was thinking of.
Nah, no rabbits. There's like a stuffed bunny rabbit in this movie or whatever, and it gets stabbed by the tree as it's going through and killing the kid. It's funny. It's done by the same guys who did Hobo with a Shotgun. It's a 15-minute short that they put out a couple of years ago. Basically, it's the trees are alive with the sound of music, la 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 la, and then all these hunters coming around chopping down the trees for Christmas time. Oh, no, 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 no. And then the trees go, what the hell is this shit? Let's go psycho! They start killing everyone. Whoa! I'm going back to thematic episodes here. So I figured today would be a great day to talk about vampires. Now, I know you like your little Twilight-y type vampires, so we'll talk a little bit about that too.
I don't mean them. And I don't think of them as a vampire. Like, they're not a vampire story. It's a romance.
Okay. Sure. You can go with a romance story. Then we would be saying that Walking Dead is a emotional coming-of-age story.
Sure.
Now, this section contains three very special pieces that the zombie of the Zach nature, sort of like I did the speaking word thing, and I read it aloud, and like it's cool by Edgar Allan Poe and H.P. Lovecraft. I like their stuff. Yo. The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore. While I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone greatly rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. "Only this, and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow, from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here for evermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, that it is, and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. Sir, said I, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is, I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door, darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back now, let us begin. Found among the papers of the late Francis Wayland Thurston of Boston. Of such great powers or beings there may be conceivably a survival of a hugely remote period when consciousness was manifested, perhaps in shapes and forms, long since withdrawn before the tide of advancing humanity, forms of which poetry and legend alone have caught a flying memory and called them gods, monsters, mythical beings of all sorts and kinds. Algernon Blackwood. Number 1. The horror in clay. The most merciful thing in the world, I think, is the inability of the human mind to correlate in all its contents. We live on a placid island of ignorance in the midst of black seas of infinity, and it was not meant that we should voyage far. The sciences, each straining in its own direction, have hitherto, I hate that word, harmed us little. But some day the piercing together of disassociated knowledge will open up such terrifying vistas of reality and of our frightful position therein that we shall either go mad from the revelation or flee from the deadly light of the peace and safety of a new dark age. Theosophists have guessed at the awesome grandeur of the cosmic cycle, wherein our world and human race from transient incidents. They have hinted at strange survival in terms which would freeze the blood if not masked by a bland optimism. But it is not from them that there came the single glimpse of forbidden eons which chills me when I think of it and maddens me when I dream of it. That glimpse, like all dread glimpses of truth, flashed out from an accidental piercing together of separated things, in this case an old newspaper item, and the notes of a dead professor. I hope that no one else will accomplish this piercing out. Certainly, if I live, I shall never knowingly supply a link in so hideous a chain. I think that the professor, too, intended to keep silent regarding the part he knew, and that he would have destroyed his notes had not sudden death seized him. My knowledge of the thing began in the winter of 1926 to 1927, with the death of my great uncle, George Gamal Engle, Professor Emeritus of Semitic Languages in Brown University, Providence, Rhode Island. Professor Engle was widely known as an authority on ancient inscriptions, and had frequently been resorted to by the heads of prominent museums, so that his passing at the age of 92 may be recalled by many. Locally, interest was intensified by the obscurity of the cause of death. The professor had been stricken whilst returning from the Newport boat, falling suddenly, as witnesses said, after having been jostled by a nautical-looking Negro who he had come from one of the queer dark courts on the precipitous hillside, which formed a shortcut from the waterfront to the deceased's home in William Street. Physicians were unable to find any visible disorder, but concluded after perplexed debate that some obscure lesion of the heart, induced by the brisk ascent of so steep a hill by so elderly a man, was responsible for the end. At the time, I saw no reason to dissent from this dictum, but latterly, I am inclined to wonder, and more than wonder. As my great-uncle's heir and executor, for he died a childless widower, I was expected to go over his papers with some thoroughness, and for that purpose moved his entire set of files and boxes to my quarters in Boston. Much of the material which I correlated will be later published by the American Archaeological Society, but there was one box which I found exceedingly puzzling, and which I felt much averse from showing to other eyes. It had been locked, and I did not find the key till it occurred to me to examine the personal ring with which the professor carried always in his pocket. Then, indeed, I succeeded in opening it, but when I did so, seemed only to be confronted by a greater and more closely locked barrier. For what could be the meaning of the queer clay, bas-relief and disjointed jottings, ramblings and cuttings which I found? Had my uncle, in his later years, become credulous of the most superficial impostures? I resolved to search out the eccentric sculptor responsible for this apparent disturbance of an old man's peace of mind. But as there is really no end to diddling, so there would seem none to this essay, were I even to hint at half the variations or inflections of which this science is susceptible. I must bring this paper perforce to a conclusion, and this I cannot do better than by a summary notice of a very decent but rather elaborate diddle, of which our own city was made the theatre not very long ago, and which was subsequently repeated with success in other still more verdant localities of the Union. A middle-aged gentleman arrives in town from parts unknown. He is remarkably precise, cautious, staid, and deliberate in his demeanor. His dress is scrupulously neat, but plain, unostentatious. He wears a white cravat, an ample waistcoat made with an eye to comfort alone, thick-soled, cozy-looking shoes, and pantaloons without straps. He has the whole air, in fact, of your well-to-do, sober-sided, exact, and respectable man of business, par excellence. One of the stern and outwardly hard, internally soft sort of people that we see in the crack, high comedies, fellows whose words are so many bonds, and who are noted for giving away guineas, in charity, with the one hand, while in the other, the way of mere bargain, they exact the uttermost fraction of a farthing with the other. He makes much ado before he can get suited with a boarding-house. He dislikes children. He has been accustomed to quiet. His habits are methodical, and then he would prefer getting into a private and respectable small family, piously inclined. Terms, however, are no object. Only he must insist upon settling his bill on the first of every month. It is now the second. And begs his landlordy, when he finally obtains one to his mind, not on any account to forget his instructions upon this point, but to send in a bill and receipt precisely at 10 o'clock on the first day of every month, and under no circumstances to put it off to the second. These arrangements made, our man of business rents an office in a reputable rather than fashionable quarter of the town. There is nothing he more despises than pretense. Where there is much show, he says, there is seldom anything very solid behind, an observation which so profoundly impresses his landlady's fancy that she makes a pencil memorandum of it forthwith in her great family Bible on the broad margin of the Proverbs of Solomon. The next step is to advertise, after some such fashion as this, in the principal business 6 pennies of the city. The pennies are eschewed as not respectable, and as demanding payment for all advertisements in advance. Our man of business holds it as a point of his faith that work should never be paid for until done. Wanted, the advertisers, being about to commence extensive business operations in the city, will require the services of 3 or 4 intelligent and competent clerks, to whom a liberal salary will be paid. the very best recommendations, not so much for capacity as for integrity, will be expected. Indeed, as the duties to be performed involve high responsibilities and large amounts of money must necessarily pass through the hands of those engaged, it is deemed advisable to demand a deposit of $50 from each clerk employed. No person need apply, therefore, who is not prepared to leave the sum in the possession of the advertisers, and who cannot furnish the most satisfactory testimonials of morality. Young gentlemen piously inclined will be preferred. Application should be made between the hours of 10 and 11 a.m. and 4 and 5 p.m. of Messrs. Boggs, Hogs, Logs, Frogs, and Company, Number 110 Dog Street. By the 31st day of the month, this advertisement has brought to the office of Messrs. Boggs, Hogs, Logs, Frogs, and Company some 15 or 20 young gentlemen piously inclined. But our man of business is in no hurry to conclude a contract with any. No man of business is ever precipitate. And it is not until the most rigid catechism in respect to the piety of each young gentleman's inclination that his services are engaged and his $50 receipted for, just by way of proper precaution on the part of the respectable firm of Boggs, Hogs, Logs, Frogs, and Company. On the morning of the first day of the next month, the landlady does not present her bill. According to her promise, a piece of neglect for which the comfortable head of the house ending in Oggs would no doubt have chided her severely, could he have been prevailed upon to remain in town a day or two for that purpose. As it is, the constables have had a sad time of it, running hither and thither, and all they can do is to declare the man of business most emphatically a hen knee high, by which some persons imagine them to imply that, in fact, he is N-E-I, by which, again, the very classical phrase non est inventus is supposed to be understood. In the meantime, the young gentlemen, one and all, are somewhat less piously inclined than before, while the landlady purchases a shilling's worth of the Indian rubber and very carefully obliterates the pencil memorandum that some fool has made in her great family Bible on the broad margin of the Proverbs of Solomon. The end. That is Diddling by Edgar Allan Poe. And now we have examples of some interviews we've done so far this year with Mark McLaughlin, with Robert R. Best, with Kim Poirier and Ray Ellingson, and with Janet and Chris Morris.
So, but I would have to say, probably, in that vein, I'd have to say that currently my favorite word is probably Knickerbockers. Because, you know, me and this lady, we'd say things like, "It's so hot today, I should have worn my knickerbockers." "Would you wear the buckle above or below the knee?" "Oh, a hot day like this, above, to be sure."
Okay.
We really got into it, and the woman would just, in our little section, the woman, we'd always, she was like coming through, and she would say, "Don't talk like that!" She would say this snippy thing, you know, "Don't talk like that!"
Nice.
"I do declare we have encountered dissension."
Oh, no.
"Dissension of our southern patois." "Don't talk like that."
Well, you know, the most fun in life you can have is poking fun at others. Oh, wait. Yes, that's still true. Well, at least you didn't eat her face off, though, right?
No. I'm sure it would have been a very bitter little face.
Yeah, probably.
It wouldn't have tasted good. We did two, spit it right out. Yeah. But see, we weren't making fun of her. We weren't making fun of her at all. We were only doing something that, for some weird reason, totally pissed her off. For some weird reason, anybody talking in a character voice really just rattled this gal's chains. And so, naturally, we would just do it every time she kind of whisked by, you know. And she would, you could just see her, like, rolling her eyes and shrugging her little bony shoulders.
So what you're saying is that you guys were persnickety.
We were persnickety.
Indeed.
Why, if only we had mojitos, as we were being persnickety.
Well, I'm sure there
and
was...
And we could be drinking them in the gazebo, wearing our knickerbockers.
With a pant load of fun.
But now, in fact, that southern thing got to me so much Then in this, my other story collection, the one that was previous to this one, Partners in Slime, which is a collaborative story collection with Michael McCarty.
Aye.
The last story in the thing is, we end the thing with each of us has a little novella in the end of this thing because it's a collaborative story collection. And mine, I won't tell you too much about it, but it's called The Nightmare Quadrant, and it's about a southern gentleman. And it was totally inspired by this whole, you know...
persnicketiness.
Yeah, this whole persnicketiness. This rapscallion of a southern gentleman who's kind of loosely based on Rod Serling. He's like Rod Serling. The character in the story is like Rod Serling, but with no talent. And yet, no matter what he does, it turns to gold. No matter what he does, it's always a rampant success.
I am a big fan of discussing things about horror, because I love the horror community, because I think it's a very interesting social dynamic where you can be or express yourself however you want and still be the individual that you choose to be. How do you think horror as a community has developed? Because over the last, say, I don't know, maybe 40 years, I think, since Romero put the Night of the Living Dead and it became such a cultural phenomenon and sprawled so much more after that. How do you think horror as a community is developing?
Well, I mean, I think it's a lot more varied now, which is good. Because for a long time, it just seemed to me like basically you had two groups. You had the goth kids, who I liked but was never a part of that. Just because it's so much work, all the clothes you have to put on.
All that eyeliner.
Yeah, screw that crap. Actually, there was a brief moment from about 91 to about 93 where my just throwing on whatever clothes I happen to have was cool. But that was it. And the other group is almost sort of a frat boy mentality where it's like, dude, did you see the tits and the blood? Yeah, man. Let's go get some chicks, you know, that. And I feel like there's a lot more there now. There's a lot more women who are expressing their love of horror. Patrick Walsh of the Scream Queens podcast, which I love, he brings a gay perspective to it. And there's just a lot more now where you realize this community is bigger than the two groups that used to seem to dominate.
Well, it's also worldwide. I mean, look at the stuff that comes out from France and Spain and Japan.
True.
And there's some awesome stuff. And I, quite frankly, as far as movies are concerned, when we want to talk about big budget product, most of the American stuff just doesn't do it for me as much as it used to.
Yeah.
But the stuff that comes out from overseas and even the stuff that comes up from here in Canada is so much better than it used to be. And the independent stuff, like the small guys who are making these really quirky movies, they're good. But the Hollywood horror stuff is like, take it or leave it, maybe hit it with a stick.
I know what you mean. My favorite example of that in the last, say, 10 years is a movie called May by Lucky McKee.
Have not seen it.
Oh, it's great. And I've, you know, in the 90s, I was a fan of art house films, and I still am. So if you can just picture me as, you know, this kind of grunge kid, sort of. I was never really grunge. I just kind of looked the part for a few years. With my REM albums and my, you know, and all that. And then going to see indie films and art house films. And so I like this new school of horror that's starting to rise up that I would almost call art house horror. May is an example of it. Grace is an example. Dead Girl is an example.
I love Dead Girl.
I love all three of those. But they, and the other thing I like about it is that they have a different feel to them than either the grindhouse days of yore, which I love, and the Hollywood thing of now, which I'm kind of on.
Now we move into some of my favorite stuff, which is zombies. Because I hear you guys are doing some stuff with zombies soon.
We are.
Do you guys play with zombies a lot? Do you read, watch, all that fun stuff as far as zombies are concerned?
Absolutely. I mean, playing with them, we're afraid to get bit, but...
There's safe techniques to deal with that.
Well, there are leash laws here in LA for them, so.
And a muzzle.
Yes.
Awesome.
But yes, with regards to everything else, Kim's actually had experience in zombie films with Dawn of the Dead, obviously, and I've just been a big fan from the other side of it up until now, mostly.
Cool. Would you have a favorite zombie movie that you would say that one is the bomb?
100 Days of Death is the bomb.
That would be our project.
That's the project,
doing.
Yeah, that we're working yes. on right now.
I was going to introduce that one a little later, so we'll go past back. And say, what's your number two favorite movie then?
Well, I'm sitting next to Kim, and I don't want to get punched, so
Dawn of the Dead!
Dawn of the Dead. but I'm a big fan of 28 Days Later as well. I think that sort of set a new standard for zombie films.
Which leads into fast zombies, slow zombies.
Fast
zombies.
Always the fast movers.
How can you be scared of something that's going really slowly?
True.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of the slow zombies remind me of the Austin Powers 100-point turn in the hallway in the first movie.
Or like Halloween, like the old Halloween movies. I remember watching them when I was a kid, I was scared. And then when I watched them when I was older, it's like, Mike Myers is just like walking so slowly. I don't know how that's intimidating.
Yeah, if you had a pair of sneakers, you'd be in no danger.
Exactly.
Yep, and definitely agree with you on that. I've always been a fan of the slow zombies for different reasons, because if you have too many fast zombies, it's a guarantee right off the bat, bam, civilization cannot survive that.
Interesting. It thins the herd a lot more, and you have the ones that do survive actually possibly deserve it.
Yeah, you would definitely survive.
Me?
Oh, yeah. You've got enough arsenal in here to, like, keep you going for years.
Well, that was going to lead into the next question I was going on, is looking at the original series came out in the mid-'80s to the late-'80s for the first, I believe, 12 books or whatever.
Yeah.
And then during that time period, there was a long period of you guys doing other stuff, and then the revival of the series was about 2-3 years ago. So with the difference of the series then versus the difference of the series now, do you find that there is a large comparative difference between the overall types of stories then with the writers that were writing then and the overall stories being written now and how they play out?
It's an interesting question.
I think that the series is darker now, whether it's a post 9/11 mentality that takes over. A lot of people are having sober thoughts about the future of the planet, and it's being reflected in these stories, many of which are very well thought and torturous for their lead characters. We had a lot more off-the-cuff humor and cynicism and a kind of a snide, a devil-may-care, if you will, attitude in the previous stories. But now it's darker for sure.
I mean, there's still humor. Nancy Asayo's stories are always funny. She has Wellington and Napoleon. And when I do The Devil and Marilyn Monroe, that can get pretty humorous. But these writers, we're using younger writers. We always in hell wanted to have at least one new writer who'd never published before, or at least never published a short piece before. But we in general used lots of prose that we knew personally, that we knew weren't going to disappoint us, and we weren't going to get a story because we were on very tight deadlines that was going to need any revision. Now we're working with many more. We're almost like an incubator for writers that have reached a certain point, because it's not easy to write for hell. You have to have a broad understanding of history and psychology and physics and the science fictional part and the fantasy part. Have to be cognizant of the literary history of hell. So there's a lot of people out there now who aren't as well read in the classics as they were before. And that puts those guys at a disadvantage trying to write in hell. So we end up getting kind of the best of the best of the young and up-and-coming writers, because you can't be just an average intellect and write for hell. You have to be able to absorb all this stuff and not just spit it back at the reader. You have to metabolize it and turn it into story. So, I mean, it's just, it's we've had some really good stories here, but we've had stories that are darker than anything that I published in Hell previously in the old series. Go ahead.
If you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their pick.